there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast today. I am excited to introduce my featured guest, Leanna Tu, who's a registered dietitian and nutritionist that I found when I was talking to Mark from RitzFit, because she is one of the experts that looks at the products that RitzFit finds and offers to their clients. And so if you didn't hear the interview with me with Mark from RitzFit, you can go back and listen to it or find the links on the OrganicGardenerPodcast.com website. But today we're going to talk about the, you know, just the importance of eating healthy, nutritious food and different things it can do for you and just all sorts of exciting things like that. So welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast, Leanna. We're super excited to have you here.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm excited to be on.
So do you want to tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So as Jackie mentioned earlier, I'm a registered dietitian. I live in Northern California, and my primary job is working at a hospital, taking care of very acutely ill patients all day. And I love it and the medical aspect of it, but I also wanted to expand a little bit and work a little bit on the prevention side in terms of how can we buy the food that we eat, prevent ourselves from getting very sick, or at least lower the risk of some chronic diseases. And so that's where I started my Instagram page, Nutritionology, where I post a lot of healthy, nutritious recipes that are pretty simple to make, and try to call out specific ingredients and nutritional facts for my followers. And that's how I first connected with Mark from RitzFit, and that's, I guess, how I connected with Jackie as well. So that's a little bit about myself.
All right. And I think, like, listeners, like, one of the things we've been talking a lot about lately is the science behind food. So even if maybe you know this, it's nice to have another resource, like if you're a market farmer, to give your customers, you know, here's some real science backing this. You know, if you have people that come up and are objecting maybe to the prices of your organic food, or like even at the farmer's market the other day, I met a farmer and was asking him if he would do an interview with me, and he was going on about, you know, there's no difference between organics and conventionally farmed food. And I thought it was funny because this other lady came up to me later and I had these green peas on the table for people to try as samples. And she's like, oh, mm-hmm. I already bought some. But then she just tasted one because we were there, and she's like, oh, this is so fresh and yummy. And she was, you know, so it was like right there, just even the taste of it showed to her just in minutes in front of me. And I just thought that was funny. So
yeah.
So the more sources we have out there of actual real science behind is nice to have another resource for, like I said, for either your clients or even could be like if you're a home gardener, your friends, your family, like, you know, just anywhere. So I am so excited to hear you today. And my listeners are also always telling me don't interrupt your. So I'm going to let you talk. Do you want to tell us a little bit about I don't know. I was reading about your such an interesting background. Like, you've been to all these schools and, you know, you have a master's degree in nutritional sciences from California State University in Los Angeles. And then you went mm-hmm. to USC, I guess that's the University of Southern California, mm-hmm. you know, training at a hospital, and then you're working in a hospital. So I don't know. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So when I have a lot of food allergies. So when I was a little kid, I was always very aware of what foods could potentially hurt your body, what could kill you. So I was always reading nutrition nutrition facts and the ingredients and the labels, and is very aware of that. Come maybe middle school, I was really small, not really growing and thriving as a child should. And so my mom actually took me to a more functional, holistic doctor, and they did some dietary modifications that resulted in improvements in health, and I wasn't ending up skipping a week of school, for example. And so that's when I realized, okay, food can not only harm you, but it can actually heal you and be very beneficial for your health as well. So I've had this saga of interest in food and a very intimate knowledge of the power of food. And I've always loved science. So I did my undergrad at UCLA, and initially was thinking about maybe being a doctor and finding the cure to childhood allergies or something like that. But after various research experiences, found that I didn't love working in the lab as much as I loved working with people. And so nutrition and the whole field of dietetics started to appeal to me because it combined those two interests of science and nutrition, as well as the aspect of working with people. So then I went on, got my master's at Cal State LA, and did a few rotations through USC, through UCLA, and now I'm back up in Northern California. And through all of that, there are many facets to the field of nutrition, and my main day job is clinical, and working with people, with doctors and pharmacists and all of that. But through my experiences, I worked a lot in the public health realm, where people are pushing for the expansion of, for example, farmers markets into low socioeconomic areas in East LA, and the promotion of healthy local homegrown food in places where people don't even have access to normal grocery stores. It's all fast food chains and corner markets and all of those. And I loved that aspect of the work as well, because it brings together farmers and the ones that are bringing the produce to the market, and people that maybe haven't experienced fresh food before. And I was really lucky to be living in California, where there are so many different farms and a plethora of fresh food available as you drive from Northern to Southern California and back. And that was very interesting to me, to have the accessibility created between the food and the people that need it. And so that's one aspect that I haven't let go of, that I really still love. And I still love going to my farmers markets up here locally and talking to the people there. So that's a little bit about my evolution.
I love that. And it's just, you know, it's so ironic in some ways that there would be food deserts in California where, you know, you're talking about those markets and, you know, just fast food stores. But meanwhile, you know, the majority of food, I think, comes from California, right?
Yeah.
Which the majority of my listeners are in California, too.
It's a great state.
So, well, do you want to talk a little bit about that right there while we're on the topic of farmers markets? Like, what do you look for when you go to a farmers market, maybe? Or what's your favorite things to do there or shop for?
Oh, goodness. I love my local farmers markets. Everything is so fresh. It's my favorite thing to do on a Saturday morning. When I go there, I'm usually getting produce. I don't tend to go to the prepared food stands too much, even though they smell delicious. I'm just there and I go straight for the produce. I love getting my vegetables there. We have one farmer that has a bunch of organic Chinese vegetables that are ridiculously fresh, so much more than a supermarket. So I love going there and stocking up over there. Then I go and I get my other things like cabbages and onions and tomatoes. And my favorite this summer were the sugar snap peas. I love those. So that's kind of what I do. And I just usually take a lap or two around first and scout out who's there. And then go back in, and sometimes I have a list of things that I specifically need, for example, green onions and maybe some fresh carrots and some fresh kale or something. But other times I just go, and I love trying new things that I've never really gotten before. So it's an experience for me that allows me to be creative and think of new things that I could do in the kitchen using these foods if I've never really used them before.
Okay, so let's say you're talking to one of your patients that you see during the week that never goes to the farmer's market and, you know, doesn't really know anything about nutrition. Like, what would be like the very first basic step you would talk about, like to encourage somebody to go to the farmer's market, maybe try some new vegetables they've never tried before, or?
Yeah, so usually if I'm just talking about healthy eating and a sustainable diet that's very general, I'm usually pushing vegetables, usually pushing my patients to have at least half of their plate as vegetables or some type, non-starchy vegetables, and maybe a quarter being protein and a quarter being starches. That's very general. It doesn't fit for every single health condition, but for the majority of people, it works pretty well. And so people tend to ask, okay, well, what do I do with the vegetables? Because they might only be familiar with maybe canned vegetables or vegetables in a salad or something like that. And I tell them, you know what? There's so much that you can do with that half of your plate. I don't care whether you do salads or if you roast your vegetables, if you dip your vegetables in some type of hummus, if you make a vegetable soup. And I usually walk them through different options that they may have heard about. And for example, I'll be like, okay, well, what about tomatoes? Oh, I like tomatoes. What about carrots? Oh, I don't love carrots. I have a bad experience with them. That's fine. What about broccoli? What about Brussels sprouts? What about onions? And I go down the list. And so they at least have some ideas of things that they might be inclined to do. And after we do that, we can talk about different options for how to prepare those. But I always encourage them, if they have access and if they have time, think about trying a new vegetable, right? There are so many out there that are delicious that you may have never even seen before, like purple cauliflower, for example, or kohlrabi, or have you ever thought about adding radishes to your salad? Just to give them a variety, because people tend to get stuck in ruts. And when they get stuck in a rut of only eating steamed broccoli every single day, of course they're not going to be very excited about that half of their plate. And so when I introduce these new options, I ask, okay, think about maybe trying one new vegetable a week or every other week. And a great place to do that is to go to a farmer's market, because that's where you get the freshest, the most beautiful produce. And I just hope that they get as excited about these types of foods as I do. And I just do my best to encourage that and say, okay, if you go to a farmer's market, that's where you're going to get the best selection of food that's in season.
Excellent. So, you know, what interests me is that, like, for me, I love vegetables. I could eat vegetables all day, but my tough one is always fruit. And so I joined this nutrition group a couple of years ago, and that was a big thing for me, was like, instead of trying to like push a bunch of fruit, she was like, eat 3 pieces of fruit a week. Just try to add, you know, 2 apples and a banana, or, you know, 2 bananas and an orange, or, you know, she was like, what fruits do you like to eat? And just like making it that much more simple. Cause I always go through that, like, all right, I buy a bunch of fruit and then it goes bad. And so only having to try 3 pieces a week just seemed a lot more doable. So I like those tips. Add one new vegetable a week into your diet.
Yeah, and it's really about approaching and meeting the person where they're at, right? If they are trying to get a whole hold of various different medical problems, it's difficult to also be like, I have to change my whole diet as well. So I go step by step, you know, like first try to incorporate more vegetables, then maybe try to change the types of protein that you're eating. And then maybe the week after that, we can talk about cooking methods, you know. So it's step by step to make sustainable changes. I've found some people have the personality where they can do a complete overhaul, but that's a small portion of the overall population. Most of us need to just go slow and steady to make things last.
I like that. So let's see. I guess I've been thinking a lot. Like, I wrote this blog post for like my separate teaching children's book website the other day about 8 things I wish every kindergarten parent knew before their kid entered kindergarten. And so I'll bet there's things like you wish your patients knew. Like, is there something that you wish your patients really knew before, or that like would make the biggest bang for their buck? Is that maybe that's it? Like just adding a vegetable, more vegetables, but
The biggest bang in their buck in terms of what?
You know, eating healthier, or, you know, for whatever that they're coming to see you for, to change that. So they didn't have to, because you were talking about prevention more than, you know, like reactive, fixing it after there's already a problem.
Yeah. So I honestly do push eating more vegetables a lot, because I find that most people don't eat a lot. And if they do, then it's the same vegetable over and over. And I believe that there's great value in having a variety of different foods in your diet, right? There are different phytochemicals and antioxidants and nutritional profiles of many things. And you can't benefit from that if you're only eating one vegetable or one fruit all the time, or you want benefit to a greater extent. So that's a big one for me, increasing the variety and the volume of fresh produce that you're getting in your diet. And also not focusing on fear of, oh, I'm not allowed to eat that because it's terrible for you, it's on the no list, but more focusing on maybe 80% of the time, eat well, have a clean diet, you know, and 20% of time, recognize that food is so much more than just its nutritional profile, but it's a social and cultural aspect. So if someone bakes me something that's delicious and they put a lot of hard work into it, but it's not maybe as healthy as it could be, you know what? I'm still going to have a bit, because I give myself the leeway. And I find that for people who are trying to overall live a healthy lifestyle, or to lose weight, or to eat an anti-inflammatory diet, it's difficult to be so strict and to create this fear of this food is evil, you know, because that can just create a distorted perception about certain foods. And so I like to be more all-inclusive and flexible and say, limit these things, eat more of these things, but 80% of the time, take care of your diet well.
I like that a lot. How about, do you want to talk about the importance of local food sourcing at all?
Sure. I think it's super important for people that have that. I'm lucky that I live in a state where there is so much produce out there, and I want to support the local agriculture as much as I can, as opposed to go to the grocery stores. There's something to be said about food that is grown close to you, not only from a carbon footprint standpoint, but also on a nutritional basis. There's a study that was published a while back, I believe it was maybe 2008, 2009, that looked at levels of vitamin C in broccoli that was either conventional, organic, or broccoli that was in season and out of season, right? So organic had slightly more vitamin C than conventional broccoli, which I think people sometimes know that organic produce may have a slightly higher nutritional profile compared to conventional. But what is really cool is that seasonal broccoli, or broccoli that was grown in season, had so much more vitamin C, I think twice the amount as broccoli that was grown out of season. So many times when we're getting food from far away, it could have been frozen, it could have been grown somewhere that where it wasn't in the peak season, and you get this one example at half the amount of vitamin C compared to the broccoli that was fresh and was grown close and in season. And that to me is a pretty big difference. And if at all possible, if you have access, why not get the broccoli that is grown in season and support your local agriculture and have it taste really good? As I'm sure many of your listeners know, food that is in season is so much fresher and delicious compared to food that's not. I give some of my friends a bite of an organic apple in the fall, and they're like, wow, this is amazing. I've never had an apple that is so crispy and sweet and all that. I'm like, yeah, because this is when you're supposed to eat it. This is how you're supposed to do it. And they didn't know that it makes such a difference.
I think that's so valuable on so many levels because not only are we learning about the nutritious value, but also we're realizing, because I kind of get in my own little bubble and like even just going to the farmer's market and being like, hey, will you do an interview with me? Like, I just automatically assume if you're at the farmer's market, you're organic. If you're growing stuff in a garden locally, I just assume you're not putting chemicals on it. And so it's good to see like you're giving that to your friend and there are people out there that still don't know these things, and so giving somebody a sample, saying, "Hey, try this, taste it, see the difference to yourself."
And that's where I believe a lot of the vendors at the farmers market can make a big difference, or dietitians at a grocery store or something can make a big difference in terms of educating people. And I love when I go to the farmers market and I'm talking to someone that's behind the stand and they are very knowledgeable about their products. There was once I went up to, I think, someone at an almond butter stand, and I was asking them, are your almonds pasteurized or are they non-pasteurized? Really simple question, but they weren't able to answer the question, which makes a really big difference for some of my patients that maybe have gotten a transplant and are immunosuppressed and have to be very careful about food safety. So it's very important, I believe, for people to be able to educate others about how great their product is or how great that their crops are, because it creates this conversation. And if you have done research in terms of our broccoli example, for example, I think it'll draw people in and create a conversation and interest about, wow, this not only tastes good, but it's good for you. And there's a lot of different resources where you can learn this information, right? I try to publish little nutrition tidbits on my Instagram as much as possible. Government organizations such as the American Institute for Cancer Research, AICR, that's a great resource and a very reputable resource to go to and look at, wow, maybe cherries can have this phytochemical that can reduce risk of cancer. Or I love what they do. It's AICR.org. And you can look up various different types of produce and see what a very reputable organization has to say about their health benefits. So I encourage others to do that because it's not a for sure statement, as in like, I'm not prescribing you this so that your health will follow as thus. It's always suggestions like this may cause that, but it's so interesting and people really love that. And if we can get them excited about the power of food, all the better for everyone, right?
What I was curious about that you were saying is, I'm curious about almonds, 'cause like I feel so guilty every time I buy a container of almond milk or buy, 'cause Mike's always telling me like there's something about the what is the difference? What's pasteurized almonds and unpasteurized? What's the difference?
Oh, well, pasteurization is just a process that it's where some type of food is heat treated, very hot heat, for a very short time to kill different microbes in it that potentially could cause foodborne illness or disease. And it's done for a food safety perspective. The reason why I ask about that is that some of my patients who are immunosuppressed cannot have unpasteurized food. So it's more of a food safety type of issue. Because I don't want them to get a foodborne illness if their immune system is already suppressed because of medications that they're on, for example.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah. So it's just a little tidbit to know in case you're having fresh squeezed juice or something like that. For the majority of the population, maybe going somewhere where they have fresh squeezed juice is safe, but there's always a risk that maybe it's not washed all the way, that there could be some type of soil bacteria on it. that could be harmful for people, so just be aware of that.
That's good to know because I was just listening. So, like, it's all interesting to me because my husband and I, so he planted this mini farm, and we're like trying to go from our big goal has been to like grow enough food for us so we don't have to buy, like, we're never going to buy, you know, we're always going to just to supplement our produce bill, I guess, and, you know, and try to eat as healthy as much as we can. And so I like try to take some stuff to the farmer's market this week. So there was interesting that experience. And then yesterday, I actually went and did my very first Facebook Live down at the Kalispell Farmers Market and was talking to the different farmers and the different vendors down there and seeing what they had. And so, because I don't usually, it's, we're in northern Montana in a pretty rural area. So I don't actually get to farmers markets very often. And then I always tell people, like, I would be a horrible CSA customer because for me to do the same thing every, like, to have to be somewhere on the same date at the same time, you know, a lot of CSAs have, you know, this is our pickup day or this is, you know, we're going to be here, here, and here 3 days a week or something. You know, like, that's just like, I need to be able to run to the store when I need my vegetables. Like, I'm an on-demand mobile girl. So either going to the farmer's market or going to a CSA is always tough for me. But so I went, but we had, like, we're not there yet. We really don't have enough extra produce to start to sell. And like, then after looking at the booths at the market yesterday and seeing, I don't even know how those people do it. It just blows my mind away how they can produce all that food. Because it looks to me like Mike does a ton of work and it's a challenge to grow food for just, there's just two of us. Anyway. Well, cool. Well, I like that resource about the American Institute for Cancer Research. I'm gonna check that out. And then I don't know, do you have, what's your favorite recipe that you like to cook from the farmers market?
Oh goodness. It kind of depends on the season. In the summer, I love my fresh summer produce, like the berries and the white nectarines. Those are so good, and I like just eating those raw. I have fun with the sugar snap peas and getting a bunch of fresh ones and either tossing them in a salad or doing a really quick stir fry with them. But come fall and winter, I eat a lot of roasted vegetables and vegetable soups because they're so warming and comforting to me. So I think almost every or every other Sunday afternoon, I'm chopping vegetables and sticking maybe 4 sheet pans worth in my oven, whether they're sweet potatoes, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, onions, mushrooms, whatever I really have. That's my easiest thing to do in terms of meal prepping. And then I have fresh vegetables ready for me for my lunches the rest of the week that I can eat with some beans, with some grains, over some lettuce or something. So that's one of my favorite things to do with my produce, especially come the cooler months.
I love that. On my show, we talk a lot about convenience. So I love that cooking it. You just put like, so you have like a cookie sheet. Do you pour like olive oil or any spices over them, or you just roast them plain and then they last all week? That's a great idea.
So I use avocado oil actually because it has a really high smoke point, so I feel comfortable using it in high heat to because I roast my vegetables maybe 400 degrees. So I just chop them up. I do each vegetable separately, so maybe sweet potatoes first, and I put them in a big bowl, drizzle with the avocado oil, add some salt, some pepper, maybe some dried herbs if I feel like it, mix it all up, then I lay it out on a cookie sheet that's covered with parchment paper, or you can also use aluminum foil if you don't have parchment paper, and just stick it in at 400 degrees until it's cooked. And there's a lot of vegetable roasting guides online if you just Google it in terms of how long you're supposed to cook each vegetable, because things like Brussels sprouts or sweet potatoes take maybe half an hour to roast at 400 degrees unless you broil it. But things like broccoli or tomatoes or mushrooms or cauliflower cook in 15 minutes. I also love using spices when I can. One of my favorite things to do is chop up some cauliflower, drizzle it with the avocado oil, then I put salt, pepper, I put a bunch of turmeric, additional pepper, to help absorb the curcumin and turmeric, which is a very strong anti-inflammatory and anti-cancer spice. I throw in some cumin and a little bit of maybe chili and garlic powder and mix it all up, and it's delicious. It gives it a beautiful golden color that adds a pop to any dish. And you also know that it's packed with antioxidants and great things for you. So that's one example, but I like to also incorporate my spices and herbs as possible.
Oh my goodness, I love all that. Especially, it seems like I keep hearing people talking about turmeric everywhere and taking turmeric supplements, and I like it so much better to just use the spice and take it in and have it in your cooking.
Yeah, it's fun. It adds such a great flavor. Just wash your hands after, because it can stain a little bit. But that's just one example. It's probably one of the more popular spices out there right now, because there's been a huge body of research done on turmeric's ability to reduce inflammation or reduce the risk of cancer or its antioxidant properties. But a lot of people don't know that most spices actually are very concentrated, potent forms of antioxidants, right? If you think about it, it's the plant seeds or leaves or bark that's been ground down and concentrated. So it's very potent. So I love using even things like, I think I mentioned cumin before, or some chili powder or garlic powder. Those are all very powerful in terms of their health benefits, and also herbs as well. Oregano has a lot of antimicrobial properties. Basil is delicious, as everyone knows. Thyme, even things like lemon zest, they add such a pop to your dressings and to your dishes and your stews that make your produce that much more appetizing, right? And adds a whole new profile to maybe the same vegetable that you've been eating all season. So I like being able to experiment in the kitchen and encourage all my clients to do so as well, right? There's the basic cooking techniques, and it doesn't take that much more to add in a pinch of this or that.
Excellent. I think listeners are really going to like this, and maybe they'll try some new spices.
Yeah, it's really fun.
So we talked about an internet resource. Do you have like a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or anything that you can recommend to listeners where they could find some more nutrition advice?
I honestly do really like AICR.org, because they're focusing on nutrition and cancer prevention, which people are interested in, and I think it's very powerful. I do a lot of PubMed searches, which is using a research engine to look at peer-reviewed articles and look at the primary literature. So I use that a lot for my own research. In terms of a very approachable website for cooking, one website is called The Kitchen. It's spelled www.thekitchn.com, and they have nice fun recipes and also some articles on how to, right? So maybe how to poach a chicken, how to make a chia pudding, how to pickle onions, right? So those I have found are pretty well tested and very easy to follow. So that's fun from a cooking perspective, on how you can change things up, or if you've always wondered how to properly make something like pesto, right? That's a pretty good resource, in my opinion.
I love that. And listeners, if you've been listening this summer, I just replayed a bunch of episodes with my friend Marissa, who was a private chef, and I'm pretty sure she talked about that for a resource, too. How about, I don't know, is there anything else you want to say, or we could go to my final question? Like, is there anything I've forgotten that you wanted to talk about today?
I don't know if I had anything specific that I wanted to talk about, but I just wanted to convey out there that if people know the power of food in terms of helping you feel energized and feel great, I think there's a growing awareness of that in our population, but just keep spreading it, right? And eating well and eating in season and using local produce. All these things will benefit our health and our relationships. And just, I want your listeners to go out there and be able to spread that information themselves. And the more you know in terms of the science behind nutrition, the better advocate you are for whether it's your own homegrown food or encouraging other people to do the same.
Nice. Okay, so my final question goes like this. If there's one change you'd like to see to create a greener world, Leanna, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
That's a big question.
I know.
I think there's a lot of things I'm more familiar with the food industry in our country as opposed to on a global scale. And there are certain bills that make subsidies for widespread crops like corn and soy really cheap and really easy to produce and sell. And it gets into all our food, and the oils that they produce from it are inflammatory to our bodies. And it all comes from higher up. So if we can somehow find a way to advocate for more sustainable farming practices, for people to have more access to local foods, to support the local farmer, that would make a really big change. And I understand that that has to be on a very high level scale and it'll trickle down. But even from the grassroots level, I think by spreading awareness, that's how we can create action and at least have our voice that this is something that we want, right? And that's when I was working back in East LA, in the inner city with people with no food access, we came in from UCLA and tried to help create a local movement, but ultimately we involved the people of the community, and the people of the community are the ones that have to say, we want fresh food. You know, we want to start to bring produce into our corner market so that it's not just fast food, chips, soda, and alcohol, right? This is something that we desire. And eventually they started our own farmers market. They had a program at the local high school where kids were learning about food justice and how to advocate for themselves. So that's one way that we can create our voice. And it can start with you just being vocal about something to your neighbors on the street, or bringing over like some fresh vegetables or something like that. Because the more people that know, the more demand that we'll create. And my hope is that eventually our lawmakers will recognize that more.
Aw, that was lovely. Can I, are you a millennial?
Yes, I am.
I mean, you look like a millennial in your website pictures. Because I always love millennials. I totally feel like they are like the generation that's finally going to change our world for the better. And like, they're not going to put up with a lot of this garbage. And they're going to, you know, they vote with their dollars really well. And they seem to care very passionately about our planet and our health and the social aspect of it too. So you have been just so eloquent today and shared tons of golden seeds with us. And I think listeners are going to be super inspired to either start their own garden or, you know, support their local farmer, or just even like maybe they've been worried about going to the farmer's market and now they're going to like be like, oh, this is something else I can do. I can put a sign here that says, did you know that my broccoli probably has twice as much vitamin C as, you know, broccoli that's in your freezer that you get, you know, you know, just wherever you're going to get it. So I think people will like having another resource to be able to go to. And then another great one that you shared today, I think, was avocado oil, like that it has that, you know, can be cooked at a higher temperature. People might look into that. So, and
yeah,
you know, we're always hearing avocados are a healthy fat. And so the more I've been learning about healthy fats, it's nice to have another one out there, another option.
Yeah, and I still love my olive oil. I just tend to use it if I'm doing lower heat cooking, or I use it for salads and over things where I'm just having it cool and raw. And Yeah, there's so much that you can learn in the world of nutrition, and I'm still learning and trying to stay abreast of the newest research. So the best that you can do is to find reputable sources, because there are a lot of sources out there that are not super reputable. So try to stick to the dot orgs or larger organizations. But yeah, just educate yourself as best as you can and ask questions and listen to podcasts and the more knowledge that you accumulate, the greater that you can do.
Aw, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us today. And I also think, you're probably going to inspire some maybe listeners to maybe they want to go to college, or they have kids that want to go to college, or just like, I love that you're a woman in the sciences. Like, can I
Thank
ask
you.
about that? Like, when you were in, what made you go? Like, 'cause science was always something that, like, I kind of veered away from in high school. I did not like chemistry. I didn't like biology. Like, the sciences were like, physics is like the first class I ever failed in my whole life. I had no idea. Like, can you, like, what made you like the sciences?
Oh man. I've always loved it. When I was a kid, I grew up watching animal shows. And from as soon as I entered middle school, high school, biology has always been my favorite subject. Physics is not my favorite subject, but I just tackled it and got through it so that I can have my end goal of studying physiology and nutrition. So I think women in the sciences are, it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing. Like in my hospital, I would say it's almost a 50-50 ratio of women versus men working in health. So it's growing, and just pursue what you're interested in. I've just always had an inclination towards biology and chemistry and those things. I think it's fascinating, and not everyone has that. That's fine, but you can still love healthy food and promote that.
Okay, well, you have a great day, and thanks for talking with me on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey, green future growers, do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book. Or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.